higher performance and faster and more reliable.
You are listening to the Open Paddock Podcast, bringing you the finest in rally, Formula One, IndyCars, Mazda Road to Indy, sports cars, and other news from all around the world of motorsport. Now, here is your hosts, Sean, Mike, Doug, Mike, and Kevin.
Everybody, and welcome to a special edition of the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you, as I always do, along with the intern, Mike Shaw. Hello, Mike.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Yes, and today we are joined by a true legend, a rally legend, and we're always happy to have him here at openpaddock.net. We have with us the one, the only, the Colin Clark. Colin, how are you, sir?
Yes, I'm very well. Thanks, guys. Thanks very much indeed for having me once again. I tell you what, I'm loving that introduction. I'm going to record that and play that back to my mother at some point because she doesn't believe me. But no, it's a delight. It's a delight to be with you again, guys.
It's always an honor and a privilege, sir. You are welcome anytime. And it's been far too long, as we were talking about before we kicked off. 18 months is far, far too long. And I guarantee you, Colin, that we'll have you back before 18 months if you can stomach it.
Absolutely. No, I've missed you guys, and I've been counting down the days till the phone call came in. I tell you, I was thinking, why aren't my American friends calling me? But very happy. As you know, guys, I'm always happy to discuss rallying in just about any form at any time.
Well, we are certainly working to try and build the fan base here in the U.S. We've got quite the following at Rally, actually, anymore. We've got a lot of people following the American events. We have the Global Rallycross Challenge and all that kind of stuff. So anything kind of rally related is really taken off here in the States, and people are really, really starting to find out why we all love it so much. So it's a good thing. So like you said before the show, you got to come over to an American event. I'm sure that you will here before too long, and it'll just be fantastic. So
yeah, I can't wait, to be quite honest with you. There are some great events, as you say, in America. The standard certainly of the competition in America seems to go up year by year, and the coverage as well. You've got some great coverage of your events out there. So yeah, can't wait till I come out. It's been too long since I've been to America. I've never been to an American rally event. So next year, I said this last time, next year it is in my diary, and I'm coming out to one of them. Not sure which one yet, but I'm definitely coming out.
Well, please let me know, because I will block off the whole entire schedule to go out there. Maybe if we get out to the Pacific Northwest around Mr. Shaw's neck of the woods, we can get you some fine wine, as I know you do enjoy the wine. So
just occasionally. Not that often, but occasionally.
There's nothing wrong with that. So there's a lot of great... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, yeah, we are pretty much the wine capital around here. If you like a good Pinot Noir, Pacific Northwest is where you go. So
fabulous. Well, if it's better than the Pinot Noir that I've been used to drinking from New Zealand, then you're on to a winner. New Zealand, obviously, another fabulous rallying destination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't follow rallying around the world to follow the best vineyards. Although we go to Germany, we go to France. We were in Sardinia last week, which had fabulous Sardinian wine. So, you tell me where the best rally is for the best wine, and I'm coming.
Well, I can, as much as I'd love you to come to the 100 Acre Wood Rally, I don't think Missouri has the greatest wine. I think that we would have to venture out to the Northwest there.
The best rally in the championship. But I'm a little biased.
But and when you go to France, I'll have to be in contact with you. Perhaps have you send some of France's finest this direction. So
how about that special Petter Solberg edition that came from the grapes that he went through last year?
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's quite an entertaining story. One of the biggest moments in last year's World Rally Championship was in France, when Solberg went off the road, didn't he, and got lost in the vines, went straight across the stage, crashed into a telegraph pole. It was very lucky. It was a great moment to watch, great moment to look back on, but it was a very, very fortunate. It was an unfortunate, but a fortunate incident because people could have been hurt, and thank goodness no one was. But, you know, the enterprising farmer, he lost, or the winemaker, you don't call them farmers, do you? The winemaker decided that he was going to make the most out of that, and that whole vineyard became the Petter Solberg vintage, and he bottled it up, put a lovely label on it, and sold it for a fortune. So if you're lucky enough to have got a bottle of that, it's one for keeping, that's absolutely for sure, because there won't be too many more Petter Solberg vintages. I've not got a hold of a bottle, but I'm sure I'll find one somewhere on eBay.
I'm sure you'll get a hold of it, Mr. Clark, if anybody. So all right, well, let's talk about some rally stuff, and we'll focus with the World Rally Championship and then just see wherever the conversation leads us. And as I said before, Mike Shaw's done a fantastic job putting together some great talking points here. And let's just get into the first administrative part before we get into on-stage action. And that is, we are dealing with a WRC that is in the kind of the post-North One Sport era. We finally had the FIA confirm that the Red Bull Media House was going to be doing the work. And we have been waiting for that for a while. It was always kind of speculated, but never official. But it finally came out. And we were told that there was going to be like a lot of big changes coming, to the promotion of the event of the WRC. Obviously, Red Bull did a fantastic job. I don't know if you've seen it with the Nitro Circus movie. They did a great job with the cinematography and really offered a lot to the movie. Can you tell us of any of the changes that we can expect in the near term, especially here in the United States, where we're constantly neglected rally coverage on TV? I think Speed picked it up last year, but it's always kind of hit or miss of where we're getting rally coverage. And is there any desire for the WRC to market their product in the U.S. anymore?
Well, you know, I think there has to be, doesn't there? Because, you know, let's look at WRC. Let's look at Red Bull's involvement. The WRC with Red Bull, with the commercial partners, with the manufacturers, is all about cars, and it's all about selling cars. And there's no bigger car market in the world, no more important car market in the world than the United States. So at some point, you can imagine that there has to be a move towards North America, whether that's the United States, whether that's Canada, you know. At this point, we can't tell, but you know, Red Bull are involved now. And when Red Bull were mooted as this potential new promoter for the championship, a lot of people got very, very excited and thought, well, Red Bull, they'll throw bundles of cash at this, and we can't have anything other than a success on our hands. Now, that may yet prove to be the case, but it's a partnership between Red Bull and an Austrian marketing company called Sportsman Media. Now, it's a commercial partnership. It's a partnership that has to pay for itself. It's not a vanity project for Red Bull. It's not a project that they've just said, okay, well, it doesn't matter if we spend $10, $15, $20 million a year on this, as long as we get coverage. That's not the case. It actually has to, number one, which North One Sport found very difficult, it has to pay for itself. And ultimately, as promoters, they have to make money. So unfortunately, it's not going to be vanity project that, say, the man who jumped out of space was, you know, that cost him $20 million, you know, but they got tremendous return on it. Tremendous return on it. But, it is fantastically exciting that they're involved. They're not people who make mistakes very often, Red Bull. You look at the history of Red Bull in terms of the product, in terms of the marketing projects that they've backed, in terms of the motorsport they're involved in. And there aren't too many mistakes along the way there. There aren't too many failures. It's just really very much a success story. So I think we can be excited by Red Bull getting involved. It ain't going to happen overnight, this transformation from what was a very sick puppy when North One Sport they had the license taken off them. You know, rallying was pretty much in the doldrums. It was all very uncertain. Red Bull came along, and they've got a lot of work to do. Red Bull Sportsman Media House, let's give them their proper title, came along, and they're taking their time. They're not doing anything that's knee-jerk. They're not doing anything without giving it due consideration. We're on the right track. Things are moving in the right direction, but there isn't a cure-all to the problems that rallying had. Mm-hmm. It is a process that has to be gone through, and it will be gone through methodically, and it'll be done correctly, and it will be ultimately done successfully.
I have to agree complete with you there, because you look at anything that Red Bull's touched, whether it be their Formula One team, whether it be the promotion side, like the Red Bull Sportsman Media House. I mean, it's never one of those things where, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. They're going to take it apart and methodically find the areas where they can go in and really make the most impact. and return rallying to what it really should be, honestly. And that is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, motorsport, you know, that the world's seen. I mean, we travel all over the place, places where Formula One doesn't even travel. So, you know, I think for sure, you know, Red Bull will take that apart slowly, and we'll see a slow return on that. So, Mike, did you have anything to add?
Yeah. I was gonna say, you know, the one thing I guess from, you know, from the observer side of it is that, you know, it's been now 9 months since they have, you know, had that agreement. And, although there just really hasn't been, I know they're methodically getting ready for all this. You know, we haven't really seen a whole lot other than some great stuff. I noticed with the website, they're now showing some of the full episodes now, where globally you can watch the highlights, which is awesome. That's a new thing they started just a few months back. Is there anything else that you know of that you can tell us in the near future that we might be seeing changes of, or is it still just a little hit and miss there?
Well, you know, hit and miss is maybe an unfortunate term to use. I don't think anything that Red Bull are involved in is particularly hit
That's
and
true.
Miss. But you know, what they're doing is they're getting the basics right. So the television, clearly. Television is still very much, for any sport, for any sponsorship, television is the ultimate goal, if you like. And to get the television sorted in terms of the television coverage and the reach of the World Rally Championship, that's been their number one priority. And do you know what? Okay, it's parochial, but the British market, for example, you look at the last 10 years and the World Rally Championship on UK television, and it's been on a very, very easily chartable, slippery slope, and a very slippery slope indeed, from terrestrial television all the way down to the most obscure pay-per-view channel, you know, and it really was in a terrible mess. And the problem there is it had been through some very big broadcasters on the way down. And when that happens, it's very difficult to then go back to those broadcasters and try and resell what is effectively the same product, because there's not an awful lot of difference to the product they're selling now to the product they were selling 10 years ago. But Red Bull have done that. Red Bull Sportsman Media have done that. We're back on terrestrial television. We're on twice a week after each rally, and it's a great job. And that's really, it appears to me, to be the focus of their attention right now, is getting their core business, which is the television coverage, get that right. Next year, I know there are big plans afoot, and this has been talked about ad nauseum for years.
And I think that's kind of the internet, right. And I was actually going to kind of segue a little bit into some of the other talks of, you know, with different changes specifically for television that's been talked about recently. And you voiced a little bit of your opinion on the web about this. And that's the idea of like making changes such as to the final power stage being like a shootout, you know, changes to the rallies itself to make them more desirable to television.
Yeah, listen, it's a tricky one, and you guys in the States know this probably better than anyone, not as well as, but better than anyone. You know, you have to come up, the general sporting public wants something that's well packaged and that has a purpose, that has a meaning, that has a result at the end of it. Now, the power stage that we have just now in terms of a rally is pretty inconsequential. I mean, 3 points, who cares? Who cares about 3 points? What people want to know is who's won the rally, and you don't get that in the power stage. So what the promoters are looking at is some kind of formula that gives you a meaningful 45-minute hours program. Now, you know, it was suggested that they might have these shootouts for first and second place, third and fourth place, so you could only ever gain one place, lose one place, and it absolutely went down like a lead balloon. My argument was, ignore the fans. It's a terrible thing to say, because at heart, well, genuinely, I'm a fan. But I would, if I was Sportsman, I would ignore the barrage abuse that they're getting from the fans and say, well, actually, you know, these guys are always going to be fans. And what we have to do is we have to solve this problem of coming up with a format that actually works in a compact version for television. We have to solve it. We can't just ignore it. You know, we've tried various things that don't work, because if we don't get this right, we can't sell television. And if we can't sell television, we don't get any money to reinvest in promoting the championship. So, you know, it's a bit of a short-term hit for all us rally purists out there. And I'm not saying the shootout is what will eventually transpire. In fact, I very much doubt whether that is what will transpire. But something will come about. Listen, it could well be we end up with a Gymkhana around a Walmart car park. You know, I have no issues with that. I genuinely have no issues with that. I have no issues with that. If that's what's required to get a new audience, to sell a program on rallying, to introduce kids to rallying, because ultimately that's what we have to do. Our audience is old. You go to any rally, and our audience, certainly in the UK, is old, and it's getting older. We have to introduce it to kids. Ken Block is doing a brilliant job of that. Travis Pastrana is doing a brilliant job at that. But as a sport, we do a very bad job of it, of saying to the kids, actually, this is exciting. This is something that you can really get into. These people are real. The Ken Blocks, the Travis Pastranas, the Sebastian Ogier, Sebastian Lowe's, Petter Solbergs of this world, they're real characters that you can aspire to, that you can enjoy every week. Mm-hmm. We don't do that well. We just don't do it as a sport, and we need to come up with a way of doing it. And when we do, the rally purists won't like it. Whatever you do, they're not going to like. They hated Super Rally. They hated the Cloverleaf format. All these things come about for a reason, and people get hung up too much on the format, and they don't look at the reasoning behind it. The reason is that we want to make this sport a global success. We want it to have longevity. You know, we don't want it to just disappear in a year or two's time. And there's been, you know, times in the past where that has been a possibility. It could just die because there's just no interest. You know, so let's trust these guys at Red Bull who have a remarkable pedigree and success. Let's trust them to do the right thing. It may not be what we want. It will definitely be, well, more than likely be what we don't like, but let's trust them to do it for the right reasons. And if the reasons are right, if the ultimate goal is right, if they've got a long-term plan, then we should all back it. And as I say, if it's a Gymkhana around a Walmart car park, I'm going along to cheer and to watch it and to smell that rubber and to see that smoke and to see those cars doing incredible things.
That's actually one of the interesting things. I've always kind of charted American open wheel racing along the same path as rally, the WRC specifically, not in the terms of obviously reach or anything, but in the terms that they're all dealing with similar problems. That is marketing to the younger audience to try and get them on board, which has always been tough here in America as well for open wheel. And it seems as though you've echoed the same sentiment with rally. But Mike, you actually had an interesting little, speaking of like Gymkhanas around the lot or whatever, you had an interesting point, an interesting opinion actually about the way that the rallies with the point system that perhaps could.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a couple of different ideas come about. And, you know, one of those, like what the ERC is doing now, where they offer points for each stage win. You know, you've got these people like, you know, the Sebastians of the world now, right? And they're just so dominant. But you throw stage wins in the mix, and the overall championship would look different to where, like, power stages would mean more. I think you're right, Colin, that 3 points towards a championship, who cares? Well, part of that's because the person leading the championship is so far ahead of everybody else that nobody cares.
Yeah.
And so if we had, I guess, maybe more of a system that, you know, would make each individual stage also a little bit more exciting, where they're really pushing for that stage win for points, might be an interesting alternative.
No, I kind of disagree with you there. I kind of disagree with you, because that's not the problem. The problem, I don't think, is the rally itself. The problem is, how do we package an hour's worth of television to make it meaningful? Not necessarily how do we make each day more exciting, each stage more exciting. I agree. I like the idea of extra points. I like the idea. I think it's a great idea. You know, we changed the running order to avoid tactics. Remember, we had a situation where a year or two ago we had cars slowing down, which I have no problem with. I have no problem with whatsoever. What that led to was amazing.
This strategy with tires, if it's not that, right? I mean, you have somebody else take one stage slower so they can conserve them for the next stage so they can cook them out there and get ahead. There's always strategy.
Has to be strategy. There's always been strategy in rallying. It always has to be an element of it. But, you know, someone said to me, listen, why don't they make the last stage of the day worth 10 points? And then you'll get no one slowing down. And then we can still get these situations where, you know, we have battles right through the rally. The problem right now is we have the qualifying stage, which is generally won by the fastest driver, which is generally Sebastian Ogier this year. He then gets the best position on day one, which means he goes and dominates day one. He's miles ahead. Day two and day three are pretty meaningless. Now, when we had championship order through the rally, that wasn't the case. You know, we had some incredible last day battles. You know, and it went right down to the wire. Now, for me, the easy way to avoid, if you're bothered about slowing down, which, as I say, I'm not, I don't really care about cars slowing down on one stage. But if you're bothered about it, introduce bonus points for the final stage of each day. And that'll make sure that your drivers a meaningful bonus points, not 2 or 3 or 4 points, 10 points, 15 points at the end of day for the final stage. But to go back to the point we're making, which is, you know, this change that perhaps Red Bull are looking at to make something for television, really that isn't. It isn't something that impacts on the main rally itself. It is something they're looking at as a standalone, almost a standalone television program, whether that be before the event or after the event, that has meaning, that has real impact, and potentially has real drama in it. And you know, it will be interesting to see what they come up with, because you know, they don't want to do anything that completely alienates them, but at the same time, they know there's an absolute need to come up with something that is sellable and does work.
And you know what? Actually, similarly here, last year, jokingly, David Higgins, our champion driver for Subaru here in Rally America, had jokingly said that he thinks that every Rally America event should finish with a Rallycross. So,
hey, listen, that's something that I think is not a bad idea, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, maybe it could work. Maybe, you know, it could work.
Okay, again, it's going to absolutely infuriate the purists. But if you had three rounds of Rallycross at the end where, say, the 6th to 10th place drivers battled out, and the winner there goes into the semi-finals, which is your 4th to 6th place driver plus the winner of the first heat, and then two of those guys go into the final, which is, you know, your top three drivers plus the two who have got through from the semi-finals and all the rest. You know, you have something that's compact, that can be done in an hour, and is absolutely meaningful. And what it, you know, maybe that's an option. But as I say, it will be dramatic, it will be exciting. Is it acceptable? That's the question. I'm not sure. I'd have no issues with it, but there are millions, literally millions out there who would have issues with it.
Yeah, well, one of the things, and this will kind of be the final point on the packaging of the television and all that, was to go back to a comment you made about the drivers being real people, being real characters. And something I don't know if it's been tossed around, but I know here in the United States, again, charting the same path as the American Open Wheel, we introduced a show called IndyCar 36 as well as F1 36 for our NBC coverage, where it's 36 hours during an event weekend with a select driver, basically. They focus in on that driver. Do you think that would be something that could be plausible for the WRC? Because you're right, there's a lot of guys like Petter Solberg, Ogier, and those guys, and Yari Matti, you know, they're just great characters as well as drivers, and it would be great to see, you know, how they kind of spend some of their off time or how they go through a rally weekend. Do you think that that's something that could actually be feasible?
100%. Absolutely. And it's something which I think is very obviously lacking in the television coverage that we have just now. You know, the television coverage of WRC has been more or less the same for the past decade. The format of the programs has been more or less the same, and I think there will be a bit of an overhaul of the way that the program is produced. They have restrictions on how they produce the program. There are time restrictions. It's a global feed that they produce. Therefore, it has to be suitable for, you know, the UK market, the North American market, the South American market, you know, the Chinese market. So it's, in some ways they have to do it to formula. But the one thing I think it very much lacks are insights, are stories, are characters. And we do have a wealth of those in rallying. We have a wealth of diversity in rallying that other sports aren't lucky enough to have. You know, we go to some amazingly diverse places, and it's what makes rallying unique, but we don't really use it. We go to some of the most stunning scenery. We go to some incredible places. We have real people involved. We have real characters involved. And, you know, you watch the program, and the program gives you plenty of lovely slow-mo shots. It gives you plenty of lovely action shots. There's some fabulous helicopter shots. But somehow, I watch it, and I always feel there's a little bit of something lacking. And that's something that's lacking for me. It's features, it's behind the scenes, it's characters. And yeah, there is definitely room, I think, for what you're talking about in terms of rally coverage. How it would fit into a global program, I don't know, but that's not my area. That's for other people to work out how to do that. But when you've got those assets, the thing with rallying is it's not, you know, it was a sick puppy. It was a sick puppy because the administration was very sick. But what we do have is we're rich in assets. We really are rich in assets for a sport. You know, we're not Formula One, we're not IndyCar, we're not stuck with an oval circuit or a track that cars just go round and round and round. It's not all black tarmac with a few spectator stands around it. It is just the most diverse scenery and the most amazing places, the most incredible challenge. And we are rich in assets. It's just how we use those assets. You know, there are many, many people who are rich in assets who appear to be very poor. And that's why our sport is. We're rich in assets, but we appear to be very poor because we don't utilize those assets. We need to understand how to make the most of them. And right now, I don't think there's a sport that we do. But as I say, Red Bull certainly are people who recognize all of those assets and know how to get the most out of them. And I have every faith in their ability to get it right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on to some of the on-track stage. And speaking of Red Bull, let's actually talk about Volkswagen. Volkswagen, first full year in the WRC, has absolutely just dominated with few hiccups to be understood with a new car, still working out the kinks for your first full season. However, they are doing phenomenal with Sebastian Ogier. Good runs as well recently out of Yari Matty after some pretty awful luck. But let's talk about Ogier. He seems to be unstoppable, much like Sebastian Loeb was before him. Do you think that's going to hurt the WRC, or do you think it's going to strengthen followers for the championship to see if there can be, you know, somebody who can beat him, or how do you think that plays out because he is doing such a good job?
Yeah, you know, let's give absolute credit, as you say, to Volkswagen. We probably had the moment of the year in the very first stage of the year. That first stage in Monte Carlo where Sebastian Ogier blasted through and won the stage is probably going to be, come the end of the year, the moment of the year. It was quite incredible. And as you say, since then, it's been absolute domination. And the only person that's come close to being able to stand up to them is obviously Sebastian Loeb in the, what, three events that he's done. He's the only one that's really offered any resistance to the steamroller of a Volkswagen effect. And the good news from a competition point of view, and that's what we're looking at. You know, the worst thing that could have happened, I think, in this whole situation was that Sebastian Ogier went to Volkswagen. If Ogier had stayed at Citroën, we'd have seen some great battles. But right now, you've got the best team with the best car, with the two very best drivers in the world there. And it's, in some ways, it's a little worrying. But what is encouraging is that Latvala is finding his feet. It's taken him a while, and that was understandable. Remember, Ogier had something like 20,000 kilometers of testing in that car last year. Latvala had never got into it before December. So it's taken Latvala a bit of time. He has made some mistakes. He made a mistake in Monte Carlo, remember? He made another mistake. I can't remember where it was, but he made another mistake. And he's had a bit of bad luck, as you rightly say, along the way. But Latvala now is getting to grips with that machine. He's getting to grips with the new team. He will offer up resistance to Ogier's absolute dominance. That's good news. The other encouraging thing is that Thierry Neuville is beginning to look like the real deal. He showed remarkable pace in Sardinia, winning stages when it was full competition. Listen, it's okay to win stages on the final day. You know, drivers win stages. Mickelson won stages in the final day in Greece, but we can't really read an awful lot into that because the final day, all sorts of strange things going on with drivers protecting their positions, big gaps and all the rest. But Neuville has won stages in fully competitive mode. And I think he's found a consistency now, a confidence that perhaps means that he is now tantalizingly close to being able to push those Volkswagens. For sure, the Ford is capable of pushing, but we need Neuville. We need young Mads Osberg to find his feet. What's happened to Evgeny Novikov? He's lost the plot, and I mean lost the plot in the last two rallies. It's worrying because these are kids. It's probably the Ogier effect. He's putting a lot of pressure on them, Ogier. These kids know they have to up their game, and you know, when it comes to it, Mads Osberg is struggling a little bit. He shows the pace. He shows us glimpses of the pace that's required. He isn't showing us the consistency. But to be fair to Mads, the mistake in Portugal, the mistake in Sardinia, both co-driver errors. So, you know, I'm maybe being a little bit harsh on Mads Osberg. But Evgeny Novikov, for goodness sake, Evgeny, get your head in the right place. Novikov will never in his career, if he drives for another 50 years at the top level, he will never have a situation where after three stages, he has a 40-second lead. It will never, ever, ever happen to him again. And he blew it. There's no other way of saying it.
He completely blew it in Greece.
He didn't think about his strategy. He didn't think about his position. He had this very odd, flat-out, maximum attack mentality. It was like, well, that doesn't win you rallies in rough places like Greece. It really doesn't. It really doesn't. And, you know, but the encouraging thing is if Novikov gets his head back together again, if Osberg manages to find a little more consistency, if Neuville makes that fractionally small step up, and it is a fractionally small step up, we have the potential to have battles with the Volkswagens. The other team, obviously, is Citroën. Citroën are languishing right now because their drivers are underperforming massively.
Oh, yeah.
And if they pick it up again, we've got a situation. The worst thing, though, could be this dominance of Volkswagen. It ain't going to be great for the sport, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed it isn't going to happen, because the other boys will step up to the mark and we'll see some proper battles.
Well, it's actually a really good point that you mentioned about Ogier and the potential for battles are down the road for sure. One question before I segue into a Hyundai question is, we've heard that that Citroën may try and approach Sebastian Loeb for part two of the season, see if he'll run one or two more rallies than what he was originally scheduled, in an attempt to really try to reverse the fortune, because you're right, Mikko as well as Danny have just really not performed the way that I think Citroën foreseen. I don't think this is how Citroën foreseen the post-Loeb era. I think they expected a challenge, but not quite the kind of lackluster performance they've put together so far. Do you know anything about the potential of Loeb maybe coming back? Do you think it would be something that he would do to try and help Citroën, or something Citroën would kind of demand of him?
No, I think Citroën are not in a position to demand Loeb that he comes back and helps them out. They can certainly ask, and they will ask, and Yves Matton will, I'm sure, be on the telephone to Sebastian Loeb, and he will do his very best to persuade Sebastian to come back. I'd be astonished. I would be absolutely astonished if he comes back and does any more events. He's down to do France, and I think that will be his last event in a Citroën World Rally car. I don't think he'll do anything more than that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's moved on. He was reluctant. I talked to him in Argentina. I had a little chat with him in the hotel, and he appeared to me to be very reluctant to even do the four events this year. He said, look, I've retired. I've done everything I needed to do. I've won 9 world titles. I've won 76 rallies or whatever it is now, 77 rallies. He said, I've retired and I want to properly retire from rallying. There's a new story, a new chapter to be written in my life. And that's what I'm looking forward to now. So, but what you can't really, what's difficult to work out is, you know, his loyalty to Citroën. We know he's got massive loyalty to Citroën, and he might look at the situation and say, well, yeah, actually, if it does help them out, me coming back for a rally or two, then I'll come and do it. But the question then is, which rallies does he come back and do? Because they can't change their number one driver. Mikko Hirvonen is the nominated number one driver, so the only driver they can change is Danny Sordo. Now, you look at the remaining events, he isn't going to go to Australia, Sebastian Loeb. You know, we've then got Germany and we've got Spain, both of which Danny Sordo assures us he's absolutely guaranteed to do. And the other rallies that you look at, well, there's GB, isn't there? I think is that just about it? I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so there aren't too many. There aren't too many. There's Finland, obviously. He won't do Finland. He absolutely won't do Finland.
He hates Finland.
He does. He does hate it, but he's won it twice. But he, it was astonishing. Because
Not his favorite, though.
No, absolutely. Probably his
not
least favorite.
Not far from it, yeah.
Because of the risks, because Sebastian Loeb beat everyone driving at 99%. To win Finland, he had to drive at 100% the whole rally, and he knew how dangerous that was. He knew how much that required, and when he won it once, he went, that's it, you know, I've won Finland, tick that off, I've done it, thanks very much. He then won it again, he won it last year, can't remember the top of my head.
One of those years.
But I agree, I don't think he'd be tempted back to do Finland. It would be a huge ask to jump back in the car. The other thing as well, they've announced this week, this World Touring Car program is absolutely on for Citroën. Mm-hmm. 2014, there's a huge amount of work to do there, and Sebastian Loeb, his team will run that program. He will be responsible for an awful lot of it, and he'll be responsible for a lot of the testing and development of that car. Okay, they'll base it, I'm sure, on an awful lot of the technology they have within the DS3 World Rally car, but there's a lot of work to do there, and we know he's doing Pikes Peak this week. He's got other things to do. Don't see it happening, to be honest with you. Much as I'd love to see it happening, I'd be astonished if it does happen and he comes back.
So, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Okay, and on that note, so, you know, seeing Citroën as making this big investment in the WTCC, and, you know, obviously they've had financial issues along with the rest of Europe, you know, like everybody else, other than really Germany. What does that have to say maybe with the future of Citroën's program down the road?
That's a really good question, and one that there's very little in terms of direction. We've got very little direction as to exactly what they're going to do. The statement from Yves Matton this week was, you know, we will still be around, we still have a program in rallying, but we will have different objectives or different goals, I think was the word that he used for next year. Now, that's with the Abu Dhabi backing. They have some fantastic backing from Abu Dhabi and Sheikh Khaled Al-Qassimi. Now, whether or not they'll become more of a commercial team, I don't know. Apparently, he's also said this week that pay drivers perhaps aren't the way forward for them. So I don't know, but the way I'm seeing it panning out is that we won't have effectively a full works team from Citroën. You know, we may have two cars, but it won't be a full works team. Two paid drivers, two very well paid drivers this year. Hövninen has no contract for next year. I don't think Sordo has a contract for next year. So what will happen there? Will they maybe decide, well, you know, we'll take one driver who we will pay, and maybe we'll take a paid driver, someone who's paying to be in the team. I don't know. Don't know what the deal is going to be for next year, but I can see it radically changing for Citroën. And that is a real, real shame because, you know, we're getting good again with manufacturers. Okay, Ford are not there, but we have M Sport still doing very well. We have Hyundai coming in. The one thing that will work in Citroën's favour and is working in M Sport's favour is the homologation on the current World Rally car is held. It's frozen. So, you know, with all VW's might, with all their money, really there's not an awful lot they can do to make that car any better. And we know right now in the right hands, Citroën is competitive, the Ford is competitive. So that is good news. That is good news for the 2014 championship. The bad news is I think it will be a different Citroën team that we see in the championship next year.
I think so, too. And just before we get into the Hyundai, I keep saying it, but there's so many great points that you're bringing up. Is Finland Mikko Hirvonen's last chance to try and secure a drive for next year, or is it pretty much a foregone conclusion that he will probably not be with the team next year?
Is it his last chance? Well, no, he's still a young man. You know, he's still a rally winner. Mm-hmm. If I was the man in charge of Hyundai, the first man I would want in my team is Mikko Hirvonen. I would have Mikko Hirvonen there every day of the week because he's such a consistent driver. He'll deliver you points. He'll deliver you podiums. And when he's in the right frame of mind, potentially he'll deliver you wins. So I don't think it's by any means all over for Hirvonen. It may be all over in terms of his Citroën career at the end of this year, but I don't think it's all over. And certainly if he goes to Finland where, you know, only the fastest, bravest drivers win in Finland.
Yeah.
You know, if he goes there and wins, then any doubt as to whether Hirvonen has lost his pace, lost his mojo, lost his balls, if you like. Any doubt, any questions along those lines will all completely disappear. You know, and we'll see Mikko Hirvonen again as one of the very, very best drivers in the world. There are question marks around Hirvonen just now, but you can't escape from the fact he has won 13, 14 rallies. Mm-hmm. He has been runner-up in the championship four times. He came perlously close to beating Sebastian Loeb a couple of years ago, within one point of beating Loeb.
So
he's a quality driver, and I don't think it's curtains yet for Hirvonen.
And that actually brings us into another Finnish guy. And I'll say out there, I think that Finland will be a perfect chance for Navikov to fix whatever ails him at this time, because it is one of those balls out rally where, you know, you need to push 100%, and as we talked about earlier, he seems to only have one speed even on rallies like Acropolis, where that might not be the best part. You need to conserve the car. But let's talk about Hyundai and the fact that there's been a lot of news recently linking Juho Hänninen to the seat. Now I will say, and I think I've said this to you before, and I know that Mike and I feel the same, that Juho is certainly what we feel is one of the most underrated drivers in rally at the time and at this time. And the reason being is that when he came up out of the IRC with the Skoda program, with the way that the manufacturers were at the time, where we really only had Ford, M Sport, and Citroën when he was really at his peak, there was not a lot of seats for him to take. That were quality seats. Now, there's a lot of news linking him perhaps to the Hyundai seat. He's been doing some testing for them. How do you feel about Juho and his prospects if he does go to Hyundai? And I know you've kind of already mentioned that you'd like to see perhaps Mikko Hirvonen in that seat if things don't work out at Citroën. But who else at the top level do you think is kind of not had a drive, who really kind of has earned one showing their pace in the lower levels?
Yeah, you know, Juho is such a great guy, such a good driver, but I wouldn't have him in my team if I was Mr. Hyundai. You know, that sounds harsh, but I wouldn't. He just doesn't have the experience in a World Rally car that you need. You need to have, as a new team, you need to have drivers with experience. And that's where a Mikko Hirvonen will always have the advantage over a Juho Hänninen. Hänninen is fast. He really is fast. You know, we saw him at the start of the year doing, what, two events, and okay, won a stage, I think, in Monte Carlo. He then really didn't get into it, unfortunately, in Sweden, where I really expected him to be a lot quicker. But he said to me at the end of the event, he said, Colin, you just cannot jump into these cars with the limited amount of mileage that I've got and expect expect to be absolutely on the pace. So I've no doubt that given time, Hänninen could be very much a podium contesting driver. But as a new team, Hyundai going to give themselves time. They seem to be in a huge rush to do everything else. So, you know, I'm not convinced Hänninen will be that your driver that Hyundai will take. But there are others being mentioned. The likes of Hayden Padden is being mentioned. There's a strong Southeast Asia connection there with Korea, with New Zealand. And Padden is being mentioned again. I'm not sure that's a driver I would have. If you're going with an experienced and a young driver, then yes, Padden would be considered as one of your young drivers. But there are quite a number of people out there. Solberg has still got unfinished business in the World Rally Championship. Would you consider Petter Solberg? He comes with an awful lot of baggage. But if you can manage Petter Solberg, there is no better man to have. He's a marketing gem as well as a fantastic driver. So, I don't know. I genuinely don't know who Hyundai will go with just now. But there are certainly drivers out there who are all looking at that seat. They're having supposedly a shootout in Finland, and there are a few Finnish youngsters that have been mentioned there. Young Pontus Tiedemann from Sweden has been mentioned as being one. Another Finnish kid whose name just eludes me.
Didn't Pontus do amazingly well at Sweden? Yeah. He was up there in top four up until the second day when the car broke.
I mean, it was a stunning,
it was a brilliant
stunning
drive.
Performance. A stunning performance. I mean, you're watching the times coming in and you're thinking, can these be right? You know, we've had all sorts of issues with the timing system this year. And that was one where we thought, hang on, they must have made a mistake with this. And they hadn't. He was remarkably fast. We expected him to be fast in Sweden. That's where he was brought up. That's where he learned his craft on the snow and ice of the Swedish roads. But there's no way in the world that I expect him to be anywhere like as quick as that. We saw Elfyn Evans making his debut in a World Rally car in Sardinia. And you know, it's a different kettle of fish entirely. And Evans finished in sixth place. Remember, Tiedemann didn't finish in Sweden. And an amazing debut for Elfyn Evans. But he was never troubling the top four or five or six times. Whereas Tiedemann, as you say, in the top four, he had splits that he was fastest on, all sorts of things. So he is one that's being linked potentially with this young driver at Hyundai. And yeah, you know, there are plenty of very decent young drivers out there right now.
Yes, and it's actually fantastic that you mentioned Petter Solberg, because I was actually going to ask you what you would think about potentially having Petter Solberg. We know that he is a guy who doesn't really like to spend his own money to get in the car. He'd much rather be a pay driver. He did all right with Ford, had a lot of bad luck with tires, punctures, and the lot. But yeah, I think it would be fantastic to see Petter if you couldn't secure somebody like Mikko for that seat. And yeah, it's actually a really good point. So,
yeah, fingers crossed. A lot of people would love to see Solberg back. You know,
with
Solberg, you have to understand that it's not just the driver you're getting. You get the driver, you get the character, you get the ego, if we can say that. You get everything. You get
the ego's the marketable. That's what
absolutely
works.
Absolutely.
You know,
the one thing that detractors will say about Solberg is that he also thinks he's a fantastic engineer, and I have no doubt he is a fantastic engineer, and I know he is. He's a very, very competent mechanic stroke engineer, but you know, when you're testing a car, quite often you just want a driver to drive it. You don't want a driver to drive it and then tell you what's wrong with it, tell you how to change it, tell you how to fix it. And I suppose the criticism leveled at Solberg over recent years, particularly the latter part of his Subaru time, was that he got too much involved in that and just forgot that his main job was to drive. And you know, but you can control that and you can manage that. You know, in Subaru he was allowed to work himself into that situation because the management at Subaru just disappeared in the last few years. You know, when David Richards was in charge, he could control Solberg. The latter years at Subaru, we didn't know who was in charge. David Richards disappeared. We had David Lapworth potentially in charge. We had Paul Howarth maybe in charge. We had Richard Taylor. Well, he might have been in charge. But who was in charge in the latter years was Petter Solberg. And he did what he wanted. And that was bad for the team. So you know, if you can find someone at Hyundai who has the confidence to say, yeah, you know, I know how to manage Petter Solberg. I can get the best out of him. He is a rally winner. And we saw it last year. And he made mistakes last year. He wasn't unlucky last year. He made mistakes. You know, but if they have someone who is strong enough to say, I can control Petter Solberg, I can get the best out of Petter Solberg, then for sure he has to be your number one pick. Maybe right alongside Mikko Hirvonen. But if you think you can manage him, he's the boy to deliver results in your car. So let's see what happens.
And you talked about Subaru a lot there. Let's just perhaps mention they have a lot of new products coming down the line. They're really kind of changing up the way their lineup works. Here in the United States, the WRX is no longer going to be associated with the STI platform, which used to be kind of their rally platform. And there's a lot of rumor in the magazines, the motorsports arena, that the new STI that will be a standalone product is going to be built to an S2000 kind of standard, especially with engine size as well. And they're actually separating that from the WRX. And then we also have like the BRZ as well, that is kind of popular. Is there any chance that Subaru is even mulling a comeback or even thinking about it now that it's kind of, as you said earlier, we're a lot more friendly to manufacturers than what we used to be, and we're changing the formula, if you will, to try and lure them back. And I know they said like four manufacturers a while ago. They used to say that four manufacturers is ideal. Anymore, you're probably not going to have any rally winning. You're going to have people not winning rallies, and then that's going to deter manufacturers. Is there any chance that Subaru is even mulling a comeback? Have you heard anything about that going down the line?
No, sadly, I'm hearing entirely the opposite.
Oh, okay.
I think Subaru have more or less had enough of rallying, which is a real shame. To me, Subaru have built their success on the back of rallying. Subaru's DNA is absolutely intertwined with rallying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm astonished that they've allowed things to get to the situation that they're in now. And you know, there's very little Subaru involvement in the World Rally Championship at any level. At any level. At least last year we had Toshi Arai in a semi-work-supported Group N car, R4 car, doing rounds of the ERC, rounds of the World Rally Championship. There is so little Subaru presence around just now that it makes me really, really concerned about the future. And you never say never. And you know, with these new formulas, this R5 formula, and there are opportunities for manufacturers to build competitive cars without having to outlay extortionate amounts of money. And when that's always available to manufacturers, there's always a chance that they'll be interested in rallying. But sadly, I fear for Subaru, and it's a crying shame. And in some ways, it's a crime. But there we are. What else to say about it?
Yeah, and you know, as a Subaru owner myself, and that is one of the very, very reasons why I got
absolutely
one.
Absolutely.
Was
100%.
The all-wheel drive, its reliability, if it can take the beating, you know, that it gets out there on a rally stage, you know, in my mind, it can definitely handle Oregon winter and me driving around in the snow. And that was a critical reason for me buying the car that I did. And, you know, I saw the reliability in people's having cars for 300 plus thousand miles, I'm like, that's the car, right? And you're right, they definitely, their entire heritage was, as far as their sales, shot up through the roof when they jumped into rally. And it is definitely sad to see them ignore that, at least for the time being. But to kind of segue into some of the stuff with the manufacturers there, you know, the R5 is definitely a new concept where they've got this price cap. I think it's 180,000 euro price cap on the cars, using, interestingly, developing with existing parts from maybe other cars that the manufacturer makes. I believe the Fiesta R5 is actually using the radiator from the Ford Edge truck. That's in it, and some nifty tricks like that to try and keep costs down. And I'm really excited about this concept. But one thing that Malcolm Wilson happened to say that I found interesting is he was saying specifically that he thinks these could be the new top class car. Now, I want to know kind of what your opinion in taking what would be technically a step down technology wise to become the top vehicle for cost control reasons. Or do you think that type of car, like an R5, should stay in more of a supporting class like WRC2 and like the regional rallies and whatnot?
Well, one thing about the R5 car is when you look at it, it looks like a rally car. It's got all the qualities of a world rally car in terms of looks. When you see it in the stages, driven by the right people, you won't be able to tell a difference. If a world rally car goes past you, an R5 goes past you, the difference in speed will be imperceptible. They'll look as spectacular. If anything, they sound more spectacular than the World Rally cars. So in that regard, in terms of the spectacle, there's no reason why the R5 shouldn't become the top formula. Now, with potentially, now there's no word from Citroën, and I'm reluctant just to prejudge the Citroën situation, but I think the logical thinking says that Citroën are clearly pulling funding from the World Rally Championship. Now, in the past, for example, when we had S2000, there was an S2000 Plus formula mooted, which was S2000 cars with a little bit of extra put on them as the new World Rally car formula. likes of Citroen said, well, actually, no, because that negates our advantage. We've got a wonderful advantage here with our incredible engineering, our incredible development departments, and we want to be able to use that in the new car. Now, you won't find that kind of, potentially, you won't find that kind of resistance from Citroën going forward. You certainly won't find that resistance anymore from M Sport or for Ford if it was ever there in the first place. You may get a bit of resistance from Volkswagen, but Volkswagen understand the need for close competition. Hyundai might also be interested in a formula which is competitive, which allows them to, say, compete with Volkswagen. So I can see, I can genuinely see a situation when this homologation ends on the current World Rally car and they're looking at a new standard, a new category. I don't think they'll just adopt R5, but we may well find they go with an R5 Plus, which is the current R5 car, with some sort of adaption to it, to differentiate it between, as you say, the cars that run in regional championships, that run in the ERC. But they are great cars, and it's a game-changing car, this R5. You know, your Group N cars, forget it. You know, your privateers who are spending 120, 130,000 euros on a Group N car, they're going to spend the extra 20 grand, 30 grand, and they're going to get themselves R5s. People who are renting Group N cars will be able to rent R5 cars for a very similar price. You know, the whole thing, four interchangeable corners on the suspension, it is completely different. The logistics costs are remarkably reduced. Everything is remarkably reduced because of the way that this car is put together, and it's game changing.
And, you know, kind of along with that is, you know, one of the things is, you know, with Rally is it that we've talked about in the past is, you know, trying to bring the spectacle back. You know, you have all these people that keep throwing back to like Group B days. It's all about the sound and these cars really going sideways around the corners. And, you know, obviously that's changed. They perform more like a Formula One car, if you will. The tarmac drivers seem to do better on gravel. I mean, just take a look at Kubica. You know, he's been fabulous out there, and yet he has so few miles on gravel. But, you know, to bring back kind of some of that spectacle with two-wheel drive really becoming integral in all these other countries that are doing their own championships, I'm noticing, like, and this kind of brings Subaru back into it, is rear-wheel drive possibly coming back as something that brings back some of that excitement. Maybe they aren't quite as quick around the corners as you'll see with the as the current front-wheel drive cars like the Fiesta R2s and DS3s. But, boy, they have the sound. They're putting the turbos in them, and they're just screaming around those corners. And I don't know. I just wanted to know your thoughts about maybe bringing back a rear-wheel drive class to bring that excitement back. That's one thing we noticed up here. We had a rally recently, just this last weekend I was at, where they – took one of those Toyobarus, if you will, the Toyota Subaru combo, that's a GT86 car, and they beefed it up and turned it into a gravel rally car. And it was quite the spectacle to see that thing driving around. And it's a new concept. I haven't seen many compete yet before, but they're really hoping a lot of people are putting energy into engineering that as a format for the future.
Yeah, you know, there are ways, there are obvious ways, aren't there, of if you like, increasing the spectacle out in the stages. And rear-wheel drive is one of those. It's whether there's a demand in terms of the manufacturers. You know, they seem to be happy with the four-wheel drive concept. It seems to fit with their marketing strategies, with what they're trying to do with their road cars. And, you know, to bring in a rear-wheel drive, well, yeah, it'll be spectacular. You put 350, 400 horsepower through those rear wheels, and my goodness me, you're going to see some entertainment out in the stages. Do we need that? I'm not sure. Things have changed in terms of the spectacle, in terms of the way that cars take. Yeah, you know, there are a lot of championships that are moving towards the two-wheel drive, although they have already made the move to two-wheel drive. British Championship, the Australian Championship. For me, it's not a good move, because what that does, two-wheel drive, certainly the front-wheel drive cars that we're seeing, certainly in the British and the Australian Championship, you know, it totally ignores one major element of rallying, and that's that you've got to put on a spectacle. You have to make it spectacular for the fans in the stages. You know, people just ain't prepared to walk for miles of the stages these days to watch two-wheel drive cars. The level of skill is still there, the level of competition is still there, but the spectacle out in the forests or out in the stages is not what it was. You know, Malcolm Wilson stages this year was open to World Rally cars, ex-World Rally cars, something like 30 World Rally cars. It was just ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
And you could not move. There was traffic chaos because the fans came out in their tens of thousands to see these cars, to hear them, and to witness the spectacle. You're going two-wheel drive, yep, it gets you a lot of interest from manufacturers. I think the commercialization, and I understand the need for commercialization in every championship. You know, you need to get the most out of it. As a rally organizer, as a championship promoter, you need to have something that works in terms of the commercial aspect. And going two-wheel drive gets the interest of the manufacturers. And that's what's happened in the UK. I believe it's happened in Australia as well. It's happening in other championships. And it's happening, yes, I suppose you could argue, for the benefit of the championship, but to the detriment of the spectacle and ignoring the needs of the fans. Fans don't, I'm afraid, I'm really sorry, want to see front-wheel drive cars putting around stages. They want to see big brutes, beasts of cars, you know, 300-plus horsepower, World Rally cars. That's what they want to go out and see, and that's what they'll go and stand in the pouring rain, in the howling gales, in the snow and the ice. They'll trudge into the forest to see those cars. You ain't going to get many doing that to see a two-wheel drive car putting around, no matter how well it's driven by some very, very good drivers. It's a worrying development for me, but there we are.
Nice. Well, one of the things that we should mention, actually, Colin, about the Northwest Rally that we were talking about earlier, the one that Mike goes to every year, is the fact that, one, we had the little, as he mentioned, we had the little GT86 Toyobaru tooling around, which was awesome. The guy couldn't even get on the power all the way, it seemed. And then there's also an old Group B-esque Quattro that tools around out there.
Yeah, so. I think I saw some images of that. It looked fantastic. I have to say, rally fans are in for a bit of a treat in the next few weeks. Jari-Matti Latvala is getting in one of those Quattros, those four-wheel drive Quattros for Rally Estonia, I think it is, just before. And so, I mean, they are still remarkable. You see them and you hear them out in the stages. We very often in the World Championship, you'll have historic rallies running in between the main event. You know, we sometimes get demonstration events around the super specials, and you know, the Group B cars are very much what people come to see. And there's a lot to be said for a car that's got an extra bit of beefy bodywork on it and an exhaust that sounds sweet. I mean, that's really all you need. Remember, these cars didn't go as fast. You know, they had anything up to, quite remarkably, you turn the boost up, anything up to 800 horsepower. I mean, remarkable power in these Group B cars. But they weren't as fast as the current 1.6-litre cars that are running maybe 300, 320 horsepower.
Yeah.
You know what? I found that remarkable myself. You know, there were plenty of, you know, record stage times being done, like when they brought Unimpoya back and all that stuff. And people were thinking, oh, yeah, Group B, they were just the fastest ever. Not really.
No. The most powerful ever. And let's not confuse that. Remember, they were running on more or less really simple standard brake systems. You know, the chassis were nothing like as good. The tires that they were running on in those days were nothing like as good. So it was the whole package. It wasn't just the power that the engine was producing. It was how that power was delivered through the chassis, through the suspension, through the tires, how the car then braked. And it was nothing like as efficient. The cars now are ultra efficient. They use, okay, a limited size engine, 1.6 liter, limited horsepower, which is limited by the turbo intake. But they use every ounce of that power in the most efficient way. And that's why you see them setting your fastest stage times in cars with ever decreased engine sizes. It is quite remarkable, but it's everything else that goes around the engine package that contributes to the performance.
True, true. Well, let's talk about our final topic, and it was something that you mentioned up earlier, and that is the timing that has been going on with the WRC. We had a really big problem at the start of the year where pretty much stages were having to go back to old school stopwatches practically just to get the times. And there was a lot of confusion amongst the teams as to where everybody was finishing. The timing was off. And this was all because they had moved away from stage one. Is there any news about bringing stage one back? Have the timing issues been fixed? Are the teams still disgruntled? What are you hearing about the timing?
Have they heck been fixed? And to me, it's an absolute disgrace. And I'm quite willing to stand above the parapet and say that. It is wrong. It is wrong that in a sport that is absolutely governed by times, that at the very highest level, we cannot get reliable, consistent timing. It is wrong. And it happened in Sardinia. The final day in Sardinia, we didn't know what was going on. There were a dozen cars through a stage and we had two completed times. There was splits for hardly anyone coming through the first morning stages. And for me, it is utterly unacceptable. We had a fantastic system that had, yes, the odd little glitch. And I mean the odd little glitch. Occasionally, we got drivers whose transponders weren't working, and we didn't get splits for them. That was
we'd have pretty much a single car with an issue or whatever, exactly. But not really the whole stage. Exactly. And to me, actually, the other thing kind of flows in this, isn't this also a safety concern in addition to it being a timing concern?
Yeah, you know, I'm hearing some horrendous stories, which I'm actually not going to repeat because I'll get into a lot of trouble about cars. But it is fact that there have been one or two situations where cars have had potentially shown as being stopped with problems that haven't been picked up, and things like that have happened, and they've passed under the radar this year. But the whole thing for me is unacceptable. It is absolutely unacceptable. You know, timing is the beating heart of our sport. Mm-hmm. And when we have a system that works and you replace that system, you absolutely have to be 100% certain that the system you're replacing it with is as good, if not better, than the system that's being replaced. And never mind as good. It isn't even half as good as the system we had. Not even half as good. And that is utterly unacceptable. We're seven rounds in. Fair enough. Monte Carlo was a challenging event. It was their first event. And, you had to give them a bit of leeway. It got better. But we cannot be in a situation where seven rallies into the year, we still cannot rely on the times that are coming out. We still cannot rely on the splits. It's not acceptable. Something has to be done about it. And I'm not for one second saying they have to bring back stage one technology, although there are worse solutions for sure. Stage one technology could come back, could do a job. It'll cost money. There's no question about that. But we have to have guarantees from the people who are providing this timing system that they know why it's going wrong in the first place and that they have a plan in place to make sure that things don't go wrong going forward. If we don't get those guarantees, then we need to, without any delay, replace them and put someone else in there. Anyway, now I'll probably get into trouble for saying that, but that's my opinion on it, and I'm very happy.
It's fine.
By that opinion.
Well, if we get an email from the FIA on it, Colin, we'll give them the what for. but they said
give them George Donaldson's name and say George Donaldson said it and not me.
Right.
You never know.
We'll have to get Georgie on the show sometime.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Well, the FIA said after the issues, especially in Sweden, that the timing company was under review. And then in typical FIA fashion, we didn't really hear anything else about what had happened. It kind of had, again, fallen under the radar. Was there ever any kind of decision about that, or are they still mulling over it? Or
I think Sweden was okay. Sweden wasn't a bad event for them. They did okay in Sweden, and there have been minor things happening since then. As I say, one or two that have real concerns, one or two that just are annoying. But for sure, Sardinia was a massive step backwards for them. In that it was all over the place. It was absolutely all over the place. And I don't know. I don't know whether it's still under review. Surely it must still be under review. If it's not still under review, then a reasonable question to ask the FIA is why it's not still under review. There should be ongoing performance levels that are required of suppliers to the championship. When you're the premier championship, all of your suppliers should be premier suppliers. Yeah. And therefore, the targets they're given, the deliverables they're given, they should be able to deliver. They should. That's what it's about at the top level. And it's not happening. And it's not right that it's not happening. It's affecting the credibility. In my view, it's affecting the credibility of our sport. And that's a terrible thing.
It is, especially when you're trying to right the ship, as you said. So,
yeah. There we go. We'll see if anything happens. My hope is that the guys that are doing it continue to do it, but that they continue to do it at 100% of the deliverables that are required of them. Let's see if that happens.
Well, the last question I'll have before we get into the end of the show here is that we had mentioned that Sebastian Ogier is doing a fantastic job this year with the Volkswagen, and a lot of it's being compared to him being the next Loeb. Ogier said that he doesn't like being compared to Loeb. I don't think it's anything based off performance. I just don't think he really cares to be compared with a Sebastian Loeb, and they seem to really have a competition where where Ogier wants to get at Loeb and beat Loeb. We've seen they did the Porsche Super Cup race at Monte Carlo and the lot. So I mean, I guess going forward, What's the deal with Ogier? Should he be happy that he's being compared to somebody so great? I mean, it's something that we see with LeBron James and Michael Jordan all the time here in the States in basketball. But with Ogier, I mean, is it fair to compare him with Loeb, or are we seeing the same talent level that we've seen with Loeb?
Yeah, I think it's fair to compare him, and I think it's reasonable at the same time of Ogier to say, don't compare me to him. You know, there are very different points in their career. Sebastian Loeb has retired, almost, you could argue, unbeaten. You know, nine world titles in a row. Who knows how many world titles Ogier is going to win? Yeah. He might win nine. He might win nine in a row. He might win 10 in a row. He might win 100 rallies. But right now, he hasn't. He's won, right now, 15 rallies, 14 rallies. He hasn't won a world title yet. He's going to, and he's probably going to win it sometime around about Germany, which would be perfect timing for Volkswagen. You know, two men at very different points in their career. You know, if I was Sebastian Ogier, yeah, I'd be flattered to be compared to Sebastian Loeb. And I think in some ways he is. Remember, there's history there. I mean, these guys, there is absolutely not the animosity between them that some people in the media would like to suggest and would like to see. It doesn't exist. It absolutely doesn't exist. Mm. There were tensions between them in their final year at Citroën. But you know, what is great about rallying is it's a band of brothers. There's a camaraderie. There's a mutual respect there between all drivers, and there is respect and camaraderie between Ogier and Loeb. And as I said earlier on, Loeb has retired. Why should he be bothered about Sebastian Ogier? If Loeb, you know, goes on and if Ogier goes on and beats Loeb's record, I'll guarantee you the first man to be at the end of that stage, the first man shaking Ogier's hand when he wins 10 in a row or when he wins 78 rallies, I think Loeb's record is 77, first man to shake his hand will be Sebastian Loeb. It's a made up rivalry, I think, you know, stemming from one or two small incidents in the past. So, you know, Ogier is very much, the thing about Ogier is his own man. He's very driven. He's one of the most driven people you will ever meet, one of the most focused people you will ever meet. And he is about winning A rallies, B world titles. And he will continue to do that for years and years and years. Whether he can do it for 8 or 9 years, who knows? We'll find out when we're all old men, sadly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that I've really latched on to Sebastian Ogier over the years, because he shows a lot of the same kind of that concentration, that absolute strive on the minor details that we've seen with some of the finest racing drivers in the world. I mean, you start talking about, like, you watched back in the day when you had Senna, who was so much about the fine details in the car and winning those races and saying, you know, I want to win races. And same with Schumacher, you know, we want to win races. And you look at the rally guys, Loeb, you know, I want to win rallies, I want to win titles, and boy, did he. So that's one of the things that I've really liked about Sebastian Ogier, is that he is completely stone cold, like, I want to work. And he doesn't expect it to just be like, well, Volkswagen should give me a good car because they're a factory team and all that. He's about going out there, making that car good, elevating, being a leader in the team and elevating Volkswagen and himself to do exactly what he set out to do. And that's exactly what you said, A, win rallies, and B, win titles. So it's fantastic. It's
what you find in the very best, never mind just, you know, motorsports exponents in the world. Look at the best sporting exponents, the world's very best sportsmen, and they all have that slightly ruthless streak about them. I mean, I had, you know, one sporting hero when I was younger, and it was Seve Ballesteros. Mm. And I remember going to the British Open in St Andrews in 1983, 13 years old. And, you know, I had my program, and I was filling up my program with all the autographs. The only person that wasn't willing to sign autographs because he didn't want the distraction was Seve Ballesteros. And he was on the practice rounds, 100% focused about the job in hand. And the job in hand was to learn the most difficult course in the world and to win the Open Championship that year. And what did he do? He went on and he won it. And it's a ruthless streak. It's a very selfish streak that the very best sportsmen in the world have. You know, and Ogier is right up there. He's got all of those attributes, which in other circumstances, in other walks of life, you would find unlikable. But remarkably, much as Seve Ballesteros, off the course, a remarkably likable character. Exactly the same with Ogier. You meet Ogier outside of a stage, and he's a different man. You see him in the stage, you see him talking to the team, and, you know, he's aloof, he's very distant, he can be quite rude, all those things. But only because he is 100% focused on doing what he sees as his job, his destiny, and that's to win. Just to win, almost at all costs. Not quite at all costs, but almost at all costs. And I admire that. I massively, massively admire that in Sebastien Ogier.
Well, that's just fantastic and a great way actually to close out the interview, Colin. We know you've got some other things to get to, but it has been a fantastic chat, just as it was the first time, to be honest, to have you on and really share your insights of the WRC and your opinions about just rally in general with the U.S. fans. Like I said before, we're really starting to gravitate to the rally. We're getting a lot of fans out on the stages. People like to see the rally cars, whether it be through Rallycross or on stage even. And again, this conversation has just been awesome. And I just want to thank you so much, actually, for coming on and taking time out of your day to spend with us.
Well, you're absolutely welcome, guys. It's been my privilege to talk to you. And, you know, the more people we can get interested in rallying, the better. It is just the most fantastic sport, as we all know. So, yeah, anytime. Just don't leave it 18 months next time, guys. I'll be sitting waiting for you.
Well, that wasn't my fault. See, I was told... I was told, you know, my boss told me that I had to go to the sweltering desert for 6 months. And so that, you know, that was 6 months of it right there. Not 18, but, you know, and again, I know that you're busy and I don't want to hound you because I know you're traveling all the time. And
he had to play in.
Never a chore, always a privilege. Anytime.
You just Sean had to go play in the sands of Nasser Al Attiyah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was over in Nasser Al Attiyah. See, when I was over there, when Qatar actually announced that they were going to sponsor or be like the main sponsor for M Sport.
Wow.
And I was sitting there thinking, I was like, how can I get a hold of Nasser Al Attiyah? I mean, I'm in his home country. And I'm like, I would love to do an interview to talk about his, you know, the deal he did to get Qatar on the M Sport cars. So I was always thinking rally there, Colin, even though I wasn't here. So, and I was following the stages and everything as it went along. So I was massively excited for Monte Carlo. And Monte Carlo is actually one of my gateway points. One of my I guess you want to call it like midway points or whatever to actually coming back to the States. So it was so I was happy more so this year than ever probably to see the Rally Championship kick off and really just follow the stages, follow the brilliant coverage that everybody associated with the crew there puts together for Rally and just makes it so entertaining for everybody. So it's awesome. And thank you for doing what you do for Rally and continuing to lure people with your infectious the infectious attitude towards Rally and the way that you cover it. It's just fantastic and means a lot to everybody, I can assure you.
Fantastic. So. Thanks very much, guys. Very, very kind indeed.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and thank you, everybody, for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation with one Colin Clark, and I can assure you that we will have him on before 18 months. Maybe we'll have him on to do an end-of-the-season review or get him on to do a 2014 preview nonetheless. But all right. Well, thanks so much, everybody, and thanks to everybody who participated, and we'll see you next time.